8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Live from our national studios here in Accra and linking up with all our regional FM stations and on the internet, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, as we examine the issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. I am Kingsley Odinchere. For tonight, partisan media ownership, how helpful is it in promoting democracy and peaceful elections, and supporting the youth to be in agriculture? Are we faring well here? We will hear from the initiative of one organization. And the question is being asked, did AMA give ample time to people living along the Udor before the demolition? Or perhaps they don't need time because the rains have already given them the notice. Before then, Behind the News, reaching you live from our national studios here in Accra. And as usual, we encourage you to send in your comments and concerns. 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we move on to our first story. There is no doubt that various political parties have started preparing feverishly for election 2012. This is seen in the way they have stepped up their propaganda in the media, sometimes disguised as responding to issues of concern to the electorate. Many media observers are, however, worried about the polarization of the media as the year 2012 approaches. The Media Foundation for West Africa is tracing the polarization to ownership. The organization is thus sounding the caution about the danger in the trend, especially as lessons are drawn from the recent election observation in Liberia. The big question is, can a media house be fair and balanced even with its owner aligned to a party? Behind the News explores the issue and first want to know what happened during the first round of elections in Liberia. Edgar Labi is a program officer of the Media Foundation for West Africa and was an observer in Liberia. Good evening, Abigail.
Good evening, Kingsley.
Can you tell us what precisely you observed, especially in relation to the media?
Okay, let me just go back a bit to tell you why we were there in Liberia to observe the elections on October 11. You know, this year, sometime in June, we had engaged the political party communicators, and by that we mean people who represent their parties to speak on radio and other media platforms. We engaged with them and the media and other stakeholders basically for them to appreciate the need to use decent and non-violent communication, you know, during the elections, before and also after. And so our observation was just to monitor how compliant they were as far as that particular engagement we had with them earlier was concerned. Regarding the media, basically we monitored three radio stations in Liberia, the state broadcaster, which is the LBS, and also the Truth FM, which is perceived to be the most listened to in Monrovia, and then King's FM, which is purported to be opposition-oriented. And then we also monitored content of newspapers. Now, what we realized was that basically the media generally did not perform badly, but then again there were some issues of concern that we came up at the end of our observation. The first one was basically the polarized nature of the Liberian media. We observed that Truth FM, like I've said, has this morning show perceived to be most listened to in Monrovia, and most of its programming content was dedicated to the ruling party, sort of in favor. The other thing we also realized that closely tied to this was partisan media ownership, where our monitoring showed that some opposition party bigwigs owned media outlets that vigorously propagated their party's agenda. These sometimes resulted in media unprofessionalism, you know, as hate speeches and insults were allowed. And like I said, King's FM is one FM station that is owned by George Weah. George Opon Weah is a running mate to the standard bearer, Winston Tubman, of the main opposition party, CDD. And so, you know, this particular station, from time to time, allowed elements of that opposition party, and in most cases, we had some unsavory comments, some intemperate language coming out of that particular radio station.
Abigail, sometimes yeah. So when we talk about the language being intemperate, sometimes we see some here. Can you describe it a little bit more? Where the presenters on top of the issues, such that even when it is intemperate, they can go in and restore some sanity.
Yeah, that's one thing that we look out for. But then when you look at the issue of partisan media ownership, in as much as presenters might want to moderate some of these things, because these elements feel that this particular media outlet belongs to us, sometimes they go overboard and presenters are not so much well able to professionally moderate such, you know, types of indecent language that comes out of such media outlets, and that is where we are worried.
Yeah. So do you think what you observed influenced the process in any way?
Well, generally, one thing I would say is the fact that, you know, from our observation and in interactions we also had with the Liberia Media Center, we observed that political party communicators tried to comport themselves due to the loss of training and sensitization given them by a number of CSOs, including NLWA, prior to the election. So generally, communication was less violent. However, tone, you know, used in delivering such messages were sometimes a bit harsh. And then the media also tried their possible best, though not, you know, I mean, those issues of biases were there, but generally they did well. We observed one significant thing, especially on the eve of the elections, where the media tried very much to broadcast a lot of messages, peaceful messages, promos that denounce wars and stuff like that, and we think that that is very, very commendable.
Abigail, we'll leave you for now, but if need be, perhaps I will get you back to clarify a few more issues in relation to the Liberian situation. But also on the line now is Suleiman Abraima, the Deputy Executive Director of the Media Foundation for West Africa. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Kingsley.
Yes, we've listened to Abigail, but as an organization, you are raising the red flag on ownership. And some are saying it's been reversed over the period. Why are you concerned?
Well, Kingsley, the concern is not merely the issue of ownership. Radio stations or media organizations definitely are supposed to be owned by people. And at any point in time, people can choose to belong to various political parties or various groups that are quite legitimate. But the concern, however, is that if a person belonging to a particular political party owns a media organization, that should not constitute grounds for unprofessionalism or deliberate propaganda that actually will not help promote democratic practices in a country. So it's really not a question of the issue of ownership. As I said, people will own the media, but it's about what happens on the media and whether that is as a result of who owns the media that is of concern to us.
Who owns the media? At least the Media Foundation for West Africa has been trying to engage ownership over the period. Do you think something is coming out of it?
Well, our engagement or discussions on the issue of ownership still goes back to the explanation that I tried to offer. That is in the sense of not saying that people shouldn't own the media. We have not ever made the argument that, well, media ownership should absolutely be that of the state. So having a state media, and then that should be the end. The concern is that of professionalism. And also in Ghana, people are beginning to raise concerns about who are the people that are getting frequency allocations. Is it going to politicians, mainstream politicians? People would say that it is difficult to define who a politician is. But are we talking about MPs or ministers or district chief executives or party executives? If frequency allocations are continuously being allocated to persons like that, then of course there is an issue of concern, because in this country, we all were witnesses to what happened in 2008, where certain radio stations almost rallied people to do things that would definitely would have marred the peaceful elections that we had in 2008. So the concern actually is not the question of whether persons who own the media are political persons or party activists and all that. But then, what happens on the media? Because if we were in a situation where MPP supporters or activists or NDC people or NDC individuals are owning radio stations, and yet those radio stations are known to be doing the most professional thing, of course, there wouldn't have been much concern. But if gradually we are moving into a situation where there are signals that frequencies have been allocated to politicians, and the indications are that these radio stations, when they are eventually set up, are going to be used to advocate and propagate the propaganda of various political parties, regardless of whether there is professionalism or not, then of course it's an issue that should be of concern to all of us.
So it means that in spite of the fact that you've been trying in the engagements, you don't see an improvement, especially you are even talking about the frequency allocation.
Yes, Kingsley, I think as Abigail did indicate, what we did today was to say, well, these were the observations that we had in Liberia, and what could be the implications for Ghana. It is important that we begin to raise all the important issues that are coming up. In Liberia, if we did observe that as a result of a particular radio station being owned by George Weah or another station being owned by somebody who is affiliated to the Unity Party, the party of the incumbent, the president, and we realized that as a result of ownership issues, there were a lot of unprofessional things that were happening. People were using those media organizations as platform to churn out hate speeches or incite violence, then we are saying that, well, in Ghana, it is important for us to begin to look at these issues. Who own the media, and to what extent can we engage the people who own the media to appreciate the fact that if you even belong to a particular political party, it is still important for you to make sure that your station, your newspaper, or your whatever media organization is doing the most professional thing, is complying with the ethical standards, and also doing things that will advance our democracy and help us have free, fair, and peaceful elections in 2012.
Mr. Bremer, I will please ask you to hold on. This time we are moving straight to Liberia itself to hear from, you are talking about professionals. This time we have somebody representing their press union. Peter Kwakwa is the president of the Press Union of Liberia. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How will you describe the Liberian media prior to and also during the elections, at least from a Liberian's perspective?
Well, there's been a mix of professionalism and, I should like to say, ethical transgression coming from the media. Many of the media people, especially newspapers and radio stations combined, have had some near, you know, terrible publication and broadcasts. Some of them have been given space to inflammatory languages from political parties, and I think that has caused some tension in the political atmosphere. We have had to call on members of the public, politicians, and media people to help reduce the temperature of elections. In fact, very lastly, during the election campaign, we saw attacks on media people. One radio station was attacked by fire, and we thought that was a product of some of the broadcasts that we saw during the election process.
Yeah. Our discussion here has tried to also focus on professionalism. How did you see your people, that is your members, also trying, no matter where they found themselves, to project that professional attitude?
Well, I mean, it depends on the media institution involved. Very many of the media institutions are owned by sympathizers of some of the politicians. As a matter of fact, a very major radio station is owned by somebody who is in the political campaign.
Hello?
One of the vice standard bearer of the political party. So if you follow those, you'll be very know that they are talking, acting as mouthpieces for the political party involved. And that has caused additional tension within the media community itself. We have also heard reports of politicians bankrupting the media to the extent that people buying pages, you know, to carry on propaganda messages on newspapers and some radio stations. So those things have appeared. And we should like to mention, obviously, that a few of them that have remained professional and tried to balance the skill. But at the very many that have decided to go unprofessional have overshadowed the very few that decided to stay away from the unprofessional reporting.
That is good. We've learned from the Media Foundation for West Africa that before the elections, at least they tried to come in to at least have dialogue with you so that you know the way to go. Do you think perhaps even with the call from other areas, it shaped the attitude of some of the media people, or they still did what they wanted to do?
Well, again, we ourselves have been engaged from the start. Yes, I was in that engagement with the Media Foundation at a local hotel. I served as one of the facilitators there. We have had ethics conference while the campaign was going on. But all the same, you do these, and the guys decide that they will not. Some of them decide that they will go the direction they want to go. Probably their influence.
Hello, Mr. Kwakwa.
By the dialogue.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
We lost you for a while, and if you can repeat your last statement.
What I was saying, we've had engagements, and I was alluding to the engagement with the Media Foundation people when it came to Monrovia. I served as one of the facilitators in that meeting. We ourselves with some partners in Monrovia have had ethics conference to just to make sure that the media is not blowing up the political fire. We have conflict sensitive workshops so that the media could try to be sensitive about the tension that would build around these elections, but they haven't done all of that at all. Some media institutions, newspapers or radio stations go off far away of the mark, and I think that developed some of the tension that we've seen in the political arena here.
Yeah.
Our hope is that we can have it better as we go to the second round in these elections, because we've already seen, as I said earlier, attacks on media institutions. There have been threats issued by political parties to some media persons, some practitioners.
Yeah, that is what
that can reduce as we move on to the second round of the elections.
Yes, and is that issue we want to ask about? Have you seen any improvement after the first round?
Well, improvement. Well, yes. I mean, what is happening right now? We see that the other party in the runoff, the Congress for Democratic Change of George Weah and Winston Portman, that's the CEC. They're threatening boycott of the elections. And so there isn't much campaigning right now taking place, but you can be sure that those newspapers and radio stations that have already, if you like, been promoted as they continuing, you know, in that direction, we've seen negative stories come on the other party, and our hope is, as we move on to the second round of the elections, that we can reduce the tempo, we can reduce the inflammatory language that we're seeing in the media that have the potential to scare a conflict. And we've remained engaged with media owners, and that is where the trouble really is. We had a meeting following the attack on the radio station. We had a meeting of very many journalists, and some of them were putting the blame on their owners, on their employers, who they say have been involved in some dark room engagement with political public, engaging the media in the manner and form that brings embarrassment to some people.
Mr. Peter Kwakwa, I want to thank you very much for your perspective on Behind the News on Radio Ghana.
Well, thank you very much.
That is the president of the Press Union of Liberia. But coming back to Ghana, we still have Mr. Suleiman Abraima on the line. We've heard directly, that is, if we can say, the Liberian DJ, that is, if some people want to describe it as such, Liberian Association, Union of Journalists.
The Press Union of Liberia.
Yes. And talking about the issues, that sometimes, even after workshops and engagements, people will still do what they want to do. Do you feel daunted by this?
Well, truthfully, not really. Based on the monitoring report, we're quite satisfied with what we observed. Of course, people would still go ahead and do what they would want to do, but for us, our view is that if we had not intervened from the beginning, perhaps what happened could have been more than what we experienced. You know, and the intervention was structured such that it is not just about getting people together to say, well, we agree that we are not going to use indecent language in the media, but also bringing media representatives and members of the Electoral Commission. And at the end of the day, having the political party representatives sign on to a communique that says, well, all of us agree that from now on, we would communicate our issues, try to use the most decent language as we can, because it is possible to as it were, send our message across without using negative language or indecent language. I mean, what we need to appreciate is that elections is about conflicts, as the Institute for War and Peace will put it. And that is a conflict of ideas, conflict of political parties, conflict of... But it's all about communication, getting people to understand you, this is your message, this is your ideology, this is what you're going to do for the people. And I don't believe that people vote based on who is capable of insulting more than the other. It's about people getting convinced about the prudence of one's policies, ideas, and objectives for seeking power. You know, but as I said, in Liberia, I believe that the project that we carried out there contributed quite immensely to the kind of situation that we observed. But of course, as I said, partisan media would always allow certain media organizations to be used as platforms by political parties and candidates to propagate whatever ideologies or propaganda that they would want to put out there.
Yeah, but listening to Mr. Kwakwa, an issue came up, that is people even buying pages. So they may not be media that is aligned, but still because of perhaps commercial interest, some may yield to some of these things. In that case, what do you say?
Well, Kingsley, I think that it is a common practice. In politics, it is about communication. And so for me, if people, political parties are buying pages to put out their adverts and to put out their messages and to communicate with the electorates why they should vote for them, I think that is a normal thing. Otherwise, how do we expect political parties to communicate with the masses? You know, political parties may choose to communicate with their audiences and electorates in different forms, either through rallies, either through one-on-one interactions, either through adverts in the media. But what would be of concern is what is the content. Does the content of the adverts or whatever is put in the media contain certain words or certain expressions that are distasteful? And that wouldn't contribute to the political harmony, that wouldn't contribute to the peace that we are all looking for. But the issue of buying space in a newspaper or buying airtime on a radio station, is a normal thing. It's about the content and what is said.
So that is the concern, because if it is advertiser's announcement, you know you can't change anything in it. So in that case, what are you advising?
I think that if it's an advertiser's announcement, for example, if GBC today, in the getting towards the elections, or even if right now the MPP or NDC, CPP, PNC issues a statement and decides that they want to buy airtime or in graphic or whatever newspaper they want to buy space, a more professional and responsible media wouldn't just say that because these guys are going to pay for the space or the airtime, let us just put whatever they are saying there. I don't think that is what will happen. And even if there is a media that still has that orientation, institutions like the Media Foundation for West Africa, that is why we continuously engage the media as well on issues of professionalism, on issues of media development, on issues of ethical concerns. You know, so it's not a question of they are going to pay for it, but a professional media organization would say, well, our code of ethics wouldn't allow us to publish this as it is, or our own internal editorial policies would not allow us to publish this because It contains certain expressions that are distasteful. It contains expressions that can incite one ethnic group against the other. It contains expressions that are insulting. And so we think that we need to edit it, or you need to edit it. Otherwise, we cannot carry it as it is.
Mr. Bremer, we'll come back to you, but we have joining us on the line now a pollster and managing editor of the Daily Dispatch. Thank you so much, Mr. Benerson, for your time.
Thank you, and good evening to you and your listeners.
Yes, do you find anything wrong with people whose leanings are known only in media houses?
No, I don't.
Yes, but what are the dangers from my experience?
Well, the other flip side is that you get people who own radio stations or media outlets who are not politicians. They may be doing a worse job. I think that the legal framework is so clear that, like my friend Bremer was saying, if somebody brings in paid advert and you don't want to take it, you should turn it down. You may decide to pursue money, take it down. Take the advert out in your media outlet. Only there is a legal action, you'll be joined to the suit. So I think that the issue of ownership is not that important. Somebody can be a businessman, yet he could be even be dying the wood for a political party than somebody who's a known member for a political party.
Yeah. So you think that checks and balances and the court processes can help in streamlining whatever happens?
Yes, and then there's also issue of credibility. You see, everywhere in this world, media outlets have open stated political positions. So there'll be a media outlet that is so prejudiced that if the media outlet tells you that, look, the color of a member of a party he supports is white, because it's not true, that person will be wearing white, and people will not believe it because they've been so prejudiced, they are so partisan in their reportage and outlook that they have issue of credibility crisis.
Well, something has been raised. That is, if it is something already printed or it's recorded, you can do something about it. But sometimes some of these parties will also buy airtime, and it's live. You don't have control over what happens or what is said. In that case, what happens?
Well, I'm sure that if someone that's giving you airtime live, and I've said it before, your network, that when the politicians blame the media, I find it a bit interesting, because as I'm saying, you cannot put padlocks on the jaws of politicians when they buy airtime for coverage. But clearly, when something is said, what I think the media outlet needs to do is to clearly put in a caveat, apologize that you are not responsible for the live coverage. Now, I'm sure if the person decides to sue, you may realize that you are done you are trying to limit the harm that the person's utterance would have done. And that when the court is, even the person decides to, he will leave you out, the media outlet out, or when they join you, the judge will see that it was beyond you and that you put in place mechanisms to limit the damage caused by that irresponsible language of the politician.
Yeah. Mr. Elson, you are a pollster. Do you see any significant shift in opinion of listeners or readers based in the stance some of the media houses take?
In 2004, one of the things I've realized is that nowadays when people buy radio stations, especially the one with multiple stations on it, they ask the sellers, and you can check for some of your friends who sell radios, they ask them to preset some of their favorite stations. And the main reason is that whenever there's a program and they are playing too many adverts, or they open the phone lines for people to phone in, listeners just move on. In 2004, the work we did, out of over 1,800, not even 10 were influenced by phone-ins. It's just a state of mind of people, psychological state of mind. And, I mean, it's somebody's business, because I think that anybody who works meaningfully will not get up at 6:37 and phone into 4 or 5 radio stations and support their party. I mean, they must have, that would be their way for their full time.
Yeah.
So, yes, people will have psychological. And, you know, if you analyze results, you see. If media outlets, whatever they say, has an impact, you see that you sit in Accra and you think that is what is happening. It's like trying to laugh and then try to take yourself to engineer some laughter.
So you are saying that people just reinforce their views by tuning into particular stations, but the views are not changed much by listening to others?
They move away. You find out. I mean, because you get, if you analyze, once you are off in the morning, just put 4 or 5 radio stations by you, and whenever they start phoning, jot down the names. They may change their name, you recognize the voice. And in 2000, when we were doing this, I did some small work with some of young researchers who were out of school, wanted to experience in research. And I decided not to tell them a few things. I wanted them to experience it. So we went on the Cape Coast of Mineral Road. So in the morning, we were in the Mineral Cape Coast for about 3 days. We went down, had some friends at the beach. So we went chatting, helped them to pull the fish. And when they got to phoning, I asked them to, let's cook this meat. They call it fanti fanti, you know, you put some fish in and some pepper. Now, when the phoning started, there were about 12, and most of these little FMs joined the big ones in the morning. I mentioned the radio station in particular, but there were about 11 phonings. 10, basically, when they started. Those fishermen and the young boys and women around were able to identify when somebody comes on. So, this is this party. Oh, this is that party. Out of 11, they were able to identify the voices of 10 of them. They knew. Now, you can see how prejudiced they will be. That because they know that when you open your mind, you're going to support party A or party B. If you tell them that today is Thursday, 3rd November, they will not believe you. That is how bad it is.
Mr. Venus, we want to thank you very much for sharing your concerns and the views too with us.
Thank you very much.
But coming back to you, Mr. Sule Brema, before we wrap up, earlier you pointed to that issue of the allocation of frequencies. Can the Media Commission do something much more than it is doing now to help the process?
Well, I'm not too sure what the Media Commission can do when it comes to issues of allocations of frequencies. Perhaps what is possible is for all of us to join hands in the crusade to further strengthen the Media Commission and also to take this debate on whether the allocation of frequency should be a responsibility of the Media Commission or it should continue to be that of the National Communications Authority. As of now, it is the responsibility of the National Communications Authority to issue frequencies. And there's this debate as regards whether we can have a media regulatory body sitting somewhere and another body, statutory body, issuing frequencies. And then when there are infractions and all that, we all then look up to another, the body that is not responsible for issuing the frequencies. You know, I'm thinking that we should really seriously look at the issue of who allocates the frequency. Must it continue to be that of the National Communications Authority, or, as I think, it should be the function of the National Media Commission?
Yeah. So where do we go from here after launching this report?
Well, we are continuously monitoring what is happening in Liberia. As you may know, we have correspondents in all the 16 countries of West Africa, even though as of now, the team that went to Liberia is back in Ghana. We still have our correspondent in Liberia, and also our partners that we work with are also in Liberia. So we are still interested in what is happening there. But also, lessons that we learned from Liberia is helping us to begin to conceptualize and actually design projects for media in elections, specifically on the Ghana elections in 2012. And the hope is that the useful lessons from Liberia would help us to actually make significant contributions in terms of the media's role and as well as the political parties communicators' role in Ghana's elections 2012. So I believe that GDC, and let me finally add that one of the critical things that we also observed in Liberia was state-owned media and incumbency abuse. I don't know if Abigail did mention that, but the report indicated that there was some level of abuse of incumbency by way of the use of LBS, the Liberian Broadcasting Service.
Service, yeah.
And that is something that I believe has also been of concern in Ghana since 1992. So going forward, institutions like GBC, the graphic, would still be on those that we would be focusing on to also find out what is happening. So it's going to be quite interesting. I believe that all the political parties are interested in the welfare of Ghana, the well-being of Ghana, and we wouldn't achieve that if we decide to use insults or to focus on insulting each other as we go into the elections. And we believe that our partners and donors would also contribute to support this agenda of the Media Foundation for West Africa.
Mr. Suleiman Abraham, I want to thank you very much for your time this evening on Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
That is the Deputy Executive Director of the Media Foundation for West Africa. We have some tests here. This one says, I think there is absolutely nothing wrong with politicians owning media houses, but rather has to do with professionalism by journalists. The way and manner journalists allow panelists to make unfortunate and propaganda statements to score cheap political marks. Malik from Vipay sent in that one. And this one from Kadri Abramani Damungo. Most media men pretend to be social commentators, but are hidden politicians. They are to be held responsible for any problem concerning elections in Ghana. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana, and you can get us live on Radio Upper West and also Radio Savannah. Agriculture is regularly acclaimed as the mainstay of Ghana's economy. Even with the discovery of oil in commercial quantities, experts caution that the agricultural sector should still be given the necessary attention. The sustenance of the sector will, however, hinge largely on the interest of the youth and the support they are given. Stalwarts in the agricultural sector speak of several opportunities for the youth. How can they be assisted to take advantage of these opportunities? Theodore Mafu is the Business Development Officer and General Manager of DEMCOM Youth Training and Resource Center. He's joined us on the line as we explore the issues. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Generally, how will you describe the support and attention given to agribusiness?
Okay. The simple word I would like to describe the support given to agriculture is a lukewarm attitude. People talk about it, government upon government talk about it, but I don't see anything concrete being done to push agriculture.
Does that mean there's not been anything at all that can really help prop the industry and push it forward?
Pardon?
I'm asking whether there's not been much to prop the industry and also move it forward.
Okay, there's been a lot of advances to push the industry forward. But in my own opinion, the approach has been somehow lacking. It's like those that matter most have not been involved into it.
Who are those who matter most?
Those that matter most are the local farmers, those that are doing the farming itself. Sometimes you find out that most banks and this savings and loans, they give money to farmers, and the farmers lack education on how to use the money to make income.
Yeah, you are talking about those directly involved at the base, and now the issue is about young people being involved. Why do you think some are not showing the interest required?
You said how, why are
young people, yes, why are they not showing that level of interest?
There are a couple of factors that are that's leading to this. One is that the young people of this nation believe in doing things that will yield quick money, and I think that wouldn't help at all. And you see, agriculture is something gradual, something that takes time, it's something that has to be nurtured. And the youth of today want things very fast. And because of that, the flag culture is something of for the industry.
Yeah.
I don't think that is it at all.
Don't you see that perhaps it's not been packaged well for them? For some of them, they see it as not packaged well, even though there may be all the profits.
That's another factor. Because you watch people into agriculture these days, they don't make it so attractive. They are kind of dressing and the kind of attitude they put towards their work is not that appealing to the young people of the country.
So you believe that those already in it are not trying to make it attractive for those who are on the fringes?
Okay, not all. We have a few that are in the system that are making it very attractive. There's little avenue to push them out, to let people know what some young graduates are doing out there with agriculture.
Yeah. So how do you assist those who show that interest?
How do we assist?
Yes. At least you are a business development manager, officer, and naturally you look at what you do to attract people into the sector.
So how do we, what do you do
to assist them?
To
yes.
Attract people.
Yes, and also, yes, to push them.
Okay. You see, naturally, I would say agriculture is the most lucrative business ever. And I don't think no business can surpass agriculture. You put one grain into the soil and look at how many grains you get. It takes time, but it is worth the time. What I would like to tell young people of this country is that you have to put more attention into agriculture. In a sense that let's take non-traditional agriculture, for example. You can rear grass cutter, you can rear rabbits. Rabbits, after 1 month, the rabbit is giving birth, when the rabbit is pregnant. 1 month. And how much does a rabbit cost these days? If you put your head, your eyes on it, you can make so much money from it. People are making the money, and we want more people to come on board so that we can rid this country of poverty.
Yeah.
I think agriculture will be the best way.
Okay, that is what you hope for. Mr. Theodore Mafo is the Business Development Officer and also General Manager of DEMCOM Youth Training and Resource Center. But we have the Managing Director himself also joining us on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
For you, what was the attraction in establishing such a business, trying to get young people to be trained in such a sector?
I realized that the only way to increase job creation and reduce unemployment is to encourage people to go into entrepreneurship or to go into self-generated projects. So I thought it wise that instead of me going to be employed, I'd like to be self-employed and employ others. That's the way this idea generated. And to be frank with you, after my national service, I was employed at the school where I did my national service. And we are always paid at the middle of the month. It occurred to me, if I'm working on my own, I have to wait on somebody pressuring the person before he pays me, then I thought it twice. Let's look at any other alternative way we can go so that we can be self-employed and employ others. I choose non-traditional farming because it is an area that there's not much attention, an area that it is talent about it, but it is very lucrative. That's why I choose to go into non-traditional farming. And for the past 15 years, I have been in this industry. It's really booming.
Yeah. We have in recent times heard of people even forming unemployed graduates association. And with this initiative, how do you even hope to break into the ranks to let them know that at least you were even employed, you had to leave and do something else, and they can also do something?
Yeah. I always have contact with such people. and always when I'm on air or I do programs, I do tell people. I don't want people to appreciate the fact that it needs employment and there's nobody giving them job to do. I want people to appreciate the fact that how can I do to employ myself and employ others. See, when you look at waiting for somebody to employ you, it's key to also think about what productively you can also do to help yourself and the nation. Think about what to do. Think about what to do. Don't only think about, let's go and look for employment. People sit down and write about hundreds of letters to institutions, several places looking for employment. And they will spend several monies to travel up and down to look for this job. I have sat down, these few monies that I have with me, what can I start with it? What can I start so that I can also earn more and more and more, and later I'll be self-sufficient, and also see if I can also employ one or two to solve the problem that I was facing in some time ago.
Yeah. So, looking at it, you are saying that for the 15 years you've not regretted. Have you been able to replicate the initiative elsewhere so that many more will have access to it readily?
Yes. At the moment, our center trains about 400 people every year. Some are Ghanaians, other people from other countries in West Africa, even American Peace Corps. When they come to Ghana, some come to our center to be trained about all these activities, so they can also go into various communities and impart similar knowledge onto them. Several organizations and institutions use our center as a practical area to train their graduates. Agri-Kwadasu College comes there, Nyane Polytechnic comes there, Methodist University, Faculty of Agriculture in Wenki also comes there. Several institutions come to our center, then we also impart our skills and knowledge to them. Apart from that, what we are doing is also another avenue for people to see that they can also go into such activities. We organize seminars and workshops by ourselves, and government and NGOs also organize it and invite us. Then we also impart our skills to such people that have been invited to such programs.
So you think you have the necessary support to be able to even draw in more people?
But for our facilities, we are capable to train and supervise 800 people every year. But at the moment, we train about 400 people. So we hope to meet our target as the year goes on.
Okay. How closely are you working with the Ministry of Food and Agriculture?
But we had a brief discussion with the Minister for Food and Agriculture at the exhibition. He promised coming to Kisimai very soon. The Deputy Director of Agriculture in charge of crops also visited our center about a year ago. We have a lot of discussions. We hope that all those discussions come through. And but that is the level our project and the Ministry of Agri have gone far.
Yeah.
And at the local level, the Ministry of Agri in the various districts also brings some of the extension services, extension offices to our center. Then we also give them refresher courses, so they can also manage, especially mushrooms, farmers in their various localities.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the area, I think, so far, we are...
You've been collaborating.
With the Ministry of Agri.
Mr. Bernard Bempa, I want to thank you very much, together with Tildo Mafo, the Business Development Officer of DEMCOM Youth Training and Resource Center. Perhaps many more young people will be seeing the initiative and also trying to take up more. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. When you are in Kofodia, you can get us live on Sunrise FM. Some of your tests here. Most farmers rather divert credit facilities given to them for their selfish gains, especially the youth. Osman Ismampusi is saying so. And this one from Andrew Manga. All radio stations must be monitored to make sure they don't incite political violence in the 2012 elections. And with regard to the Ghanaian constitution, all media organizations must be independent to avoid any misconduct and violence. Nuhu Buabula. And I don't think a politician should own a radio or media house, for it is not good for our democracy. Because most of the times, there are two bias, Akansake from Kumasi, sent in that one. Behind the news, live on Radio Ghana. Behind the news, live on Ubuntu 96.5 FM and Unique 95.7. Before we get on to our next story, we quickly want to pick one from Abraham Donko.
Parliament has added its voice to that of the President by overwhelmingly condemning the practice of homosexuality in the country. Parliament has also commended President Mills for boldly stating Ghana's stance on the issue. The President of the Musicians Union of Ghana, Music Abaisa Sekufo, known in showbiz as Ogbo, says it is necessary for Ghanaians to tolerate each other, especially as the country prepares for next year's general elections. He said this will ensure peace, deepen democracy and sustainable development. Ogbo said this when he launched the International Day for Tolerance in Accra. Plans are underway to rebrand the National Theatre. Its new name will be Center for Artistic Excellence. The Minister for Chieftaincy and Culture, Alex Esumahensa, who announced this at the Meet the Press series in Accra, said the National Theatre will mark its 20th anniversary next year. He said the ministry considers the rebranding necessary and appropriate to give Ghanaians the feel of African indigenous culture, drama and dance. Government has been urged to make the necessary changes in the educational curricula to accommodate the study of oil and gas. This to enable the youth to take a charge of the management of the resource in the near future. An oil expert from Petroleum Technology and Development Fund in Nigeria, Neka Jacob, made this call during a conference on oil and gas organized by the National Youth Authority in Accra. Six students of the University of Ghana, Legon, standing trial for the alleged murder of a first-year student of the University of Ohene Bakufi in Tibuateng have been remanded in prison custody by a Madina Magistrate Court.
Behind the news, live on Garden City Radio, Kumasi. And this is our last story. True to its word, the Accra Metropolitan Assembly is not going to rest to be accused as being the proverbial vulture. 1 week after the destructive floods that caused havoc to property and claimed lives, the Metropolitan Assembly got to work in pulling down illegal structures along the Odo River in Accra. However, the Assembly has been accused of not giving the residents and owners of the structures adequate notice and ample time to pack out. Well, we've arranged to speak to the public relations officer, but we're having a few challenges. That story is still developing and we're bringing it to you. But that is where we wrap it all up for today on Behind the News. On behalf of our production team, Christopher Siedu, Bright Agama, and Abraham Asare, my name is Kingsley of Interest, together with our summarizer, Abraham Donko, and our sound man.